Hi, friends. It's Vin Scully. It's time for
Dr. Clapper.
In sports, there's winning and losing and getting injured. That's why there's Dr. Clapper.
Dr. Clapper is the former head of orthopedic surgery at Cedars-Sinai.
The Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper, presented by Cedars-Sinai.
Hey, Dr. Clapper.
How are you?
Saturday mornings from 7 to 9.
Silence is golden when you can't think of a good answer.
Yes, Doc, I love your show.
Now, here he is, Dr. Robert Clapper.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. Thanks so much for joining me each and every Saturday. 12 years. Can you imagine? Over 500 shows. Thanks to the great Will Orms for putting the sound bites together and having our segment where there's a will, there's a way. I love doing Clapper Vision. And you can't imagine how many people. I went to a high school graduation party this weekend. Two people came up to me and said, I had lunch with someone. And we started talking. Hey, I listen to this guy on the radio every Saturday. This guy, because I know them at the party, came up to me. He's talking about you, Robbie. Unbelievable. Who knew this many people could listen? I love it. I'm so excited because I get to talk about food and art and sports and my love of surgery. And mishmash it all together. And at 8:15, we're going to talk about food. That subtle greatness called Italian ices. Oh, my God, are they great. Leone's, Thousand Oaks. Greg Leone's going to be my guest. But when I knew he was going to be the guest, it made me think, what is it that's so special? His ices are amazing. But the best part is going there. Because you park the car in front of his building, and there's nobody else around. It's the greatest. And his name is on the building. It's his. All that dream, all that work that goes into it. Something to that. Where in the world of sports? Where in the world of art? Do you see someone who owns the building? Control your own destiny. Let me tell you something. Someone in sports knows what it's like to not have your own building. And he's doing something about it. Steve Ballmer bought the Clippers. Ramona Shelburne sat down with him and said, oh my God, how are you going to be able to do this with the Lakers into Staples Center? But you know what? He's doing it. You'll hear Stephen A. Smith and Max Kellerman going, get ready, Los Angeles. Steve Ballmer is coming.
You're playing in the same city, in the same exact arena.
It drives the Laker fans. It's absolutely insane.
Los Angeles.
The Los Angeles Clippers are breaking ground on their new home.
They will create new fans in L.A. that are Clippers fans instead of Lakers fans.
How long have you wanted to build this stadium?
When I first bought the Clippers, I said, isn't it great? Don't need to build a stadium. Then I buy the team. It's like, whoa.
Whoa.
Then it's not our house. This is when, you know, the putting up the pictures of our guys.
That's right. That's right. Whoa. W-H-O-A.
Yeah. Banners. So I'd say within a year or so of buying the team, I'm starting to get skeptical. We need our own house. And let's make our house a basketball mecca. Just the best place in the world. We're building a fantastic building because we're trying to communicate. We are a fantastic organization. Our fans need to know that. Our players, free agents. It's an identity thing.
He had two previous attempts at owning a team, the Seattle Supersonics, where he was from, where Microsoft was, where he was the president. He had to always deal with, hey, well, Bill Gates built Microsoft, you know, you're just running the company, and it must drove him crazy. Then he goes to try to buy this because he loves sports, he loves basketball, to buy the Seattle Supersonics, and they go and leave, go to Oklahoma City, but he had to do it with a bunch of partners. Then he tried again, a bunch of partners, didn't work. Guess what? There's no partners. He owns the Clippers himself. He don't have to answer to anybody. But then he shows up at the Staples Center and realizes, what the hell? This is the Lakers arena. It ain't mine.
So this arena, it's named the Intuit Dome. It's been years in the making. Today's the groundbreaking ceremony. And I understand that you teared up going through your remarks for the launch event. What's going through your mind at this moment?
Oh, I'm excited. I'm excited for our fans, for Clipper Nation. I'm excited for our team to have our own house, our own building, our own energy, kind of a basketball
an homage to basketball, all about the game. I'm excited about it, and I'm excited what it can mean for the competitiveness of our team.
Steve Ballmer, I'm a Laker fan, but I admire you. We all do, because you're making it happen. Too bad it's with the Clippers, but you know what? They ain't the Clippers of old.
You are fully funding this project yourself. I hear you've done some extensive research. I mean, you've traveled and visited arenas, 20 different arenas around the country. What is it about certain designs that you like, and what are you going to do with this arena?
It really starts with two things. It starts with that bowl where you watch the game. How do you keep people focused on the game? How do you keep them understanding what's going on in the game? How do you keep the noise? And so you want it tight. You want it vertical.
Steve Ballmer's father, he's from Detroit, Michigan. His dad worked for the Ford Motor Company, managing the plant. He didn't work for General Motors, which is just a generic name. Ford Motors is named after Henry Ford, another guy who had a dream, who built his own building. That seed is in his head. I need my own building, whether it's Italian ices or Clippers basketball. But what about in the world of art? In the world of art, someone did the exact same thing. And interestingly enough, he's from Detroit, and he worked for the Ford Motor Company. And saw the building where raw material came in one end and a finished car went out the other. And he said to himself, maybe I can do this exact same thing. Build my own building where the raw talent and art comes in one end and the finished singer comes out the other. His name is Berry Gordy, and he's still alive. He's 92 years old. Listen to him make sense of that connection I'm talking about with the Ford Motor Company.
And Mickey Stevens and I, and our director, and then we had a lot of lucky breaks. I happened to have worked in the Ford Motor Company, and I saw the assembly line cars come in one door, bare metal frame, and out another door, a brand new car. And I said, oh, what a wonderful idea. I think I want to do this with people, And, of course, people wanted to throw me into the crazy house. Human beings, you can't do that. And so, but we ended up having various sections where we had an artist development. We had a producer's studio. We had choreographers that we brought in. And then we had a woman who had a finishing school, and her name was Maxine Powell. And, she taught them, and their big goal was one day they would be sitting with kings and queens. And, in fact, they did meet the Queen of England, so she was right, and they were very proper. And
talk about a dream. I'm going to buy this house with a big garage in Detroit, Michigan, and I'm going to make artists that are going to sit with the Queen of England. The Queen of England's going to be delighted to meet my people. Can you imagine? That's crazy. And it happened. Listen to this interview with a dreamer who made it come true, Berry Gordy.
Motown was the big success that I had, and it came from a dream, and one that happened to have come true by luck and love, and it's a whole lot of stuff,
Because I've been in Detroit, and I went to the Motown Studios. And, it's so... Because it's just a house. It's just a little house on a street.
That's right. But it's your own house. Steve Ballmer. Greg Leone. It's your own house. It's your own building.
That's right. A little house on the street.
Did you live in that house?
Yes, I did. I lived in that house that was actually kind of a house with a big garage, which I was lucky enough to find. And we just set up a studio back in the garage and made it into a studio, and it was unique.
You imagine, when you're going to see Motown Studios, you imagine you will drive out and see big studios. And then when you're in it, and you're in the small recording studio, and the Motown tracks are playing while you're sat in this room. And it's extraordinary to think of the amount of, musical heritage that was created in that space.
Amazing.
Apart from putting together the talent, apart from signing the amazing artists you did, what made that Motown sound so unique?
Well, originality, and we tried to make as much truth in the music as we could. The truth of how you felt, the truth of what your music was saying, you know. And each person would come in and bring another kind of magical feel to it. Mm. I mean, Smokey was first. Well, I was actually first because I wrote everything and I produced everything. And then Smokey was my first artist, and I was at the top of everything. I was the king of everything, with a lot of people around. But Smokey came, and I made my first big mistake was teaching him how to write songs. You know? And so I was at the top of the totem pole, and soon Smokey was the greatest poet I had ever seen, but he just didn't know how to phrase a song, you know, front, middle, and end, first, second, third, and structure.
Wow.
But once he learned that, he just became phenomenal, and he started producing for himself the Miracles and everybody. And but Smokey had so much love in him. It was just incredible. And with that talent and the love, you know, I soon was knocked down from the top of the totem pole. and other people came. That was Norman Whitfield, Holland Dozier Holland, you know, Nick and Val.
But controlling his own destiny, having his own building, that's what happens. You need that. It's a risk. Nobody says it's easy. It's a risk. But whether you're owning a basketball team, making records, or Italian ISIS, it's an awesome dream to participate in. You get to feel Steve Ballmer's presence in this new arena. You can feel it when you listen to Diana Ross. And you can taste it when you taste the Leone's Italian ISIS.
We had so much fun with developing that because it all came from love of ourselves, love of each other, and love of the people that we were writing music for.
But I'm sure there are record executives listening to this now who are so envious of the discipline you found in your artists. Because often, you know, performers, it's like herding cats. I mean, it's very difficult to steer them in the direction you want to go. Yeah. How did you keep them on the straight and narrow? How did you make sure they adhered to all your finishing school rules?
I don't know, he says.
I don't know. I just think that it was the process and the fact that we had various sayings, you know, competition breeds champions, but you can't let the competition get in the way of the love. And we stuck with that. And they all became champions.
And of course, when it's successful and it's growing and as you say, it's all coming out of love and people are seeing the results, it's great. But at the other end, when you get to the point where you have to drop someone, or if somebody says, actually, I'm leaving Motown. How hard was that?
First comes the success. We'll worry about all the rest later. Coming up next, I want to talk to someone who knows a lot about success, about building their own building, controlling their own destiny. It's not Steve Ballmer, and it's not Berry Gordy. It's Greg Leone from Leone's Italian ISIS. Coming up next on the Weekend Warriors Show here on 710 ESPN.
This is Keyshawn in the Morning. My man, Dr. Clapper, and the Weekend Warrior Show starts your Saturday morning. Join the doc from 7 to 9 a.m. But don't miss my show, Monday morning, on 710 ESPN.
What's going on, L.A.? This is Kobe Bryant.
At 42 years old, you know what your new nickname is for me?
Start your weekend off right, listening to the Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper.
You're not Matthew from Santa Monica anymore. You're Mr. Preop.
Every Saturday morning from 7 to 9 a.m. on ESPN, 710, home of your Los Angeles Lakers.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. It's hard to interrupt Michael Jackson and the Jackson 5. But I got to. Because I'm so excited to talk to my next guest, the great Greg Leone, who owns Leone's Italian ISIS. Greg, thanks so much for getting up early to be with us.
Oh, any time for you. Nice to meet you, Dr. Clapper. It's a pleasure.
It's my pleasure. And get ready. You're going to have so many Weekend Warriors at your shop. I'm so excited for you. Tell us, Greg, before we get started, who are you? Where are you from? What's your father do for a living? And how the hell did Italian ISIS enter your life?
We grew up in, born in Brooklyn, New York, in Park Slope. Grew up in Bay Ridge, Staten Island, New York City.
Wow.
And, you know, when you grow up in the Mecca of the melting pot, you're surrounded by the greatest food.
That's right. Right?
So part of that food is Italian ice, Italian pastries, the greatest pizza on the planet.
Right.
You're
singing my song. Forget about Berry Gordy, Greg Leone. You're singing my song.
Well, you know, music and food are very similar because it is an art.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm an artist at heart. I mean, I've been a musician since I was 2 and a half, and I've been on tour my whole life. I've done a lot.
Wow.
And I'm sure we're going to talk about it. But how did I? The question was about Italian.
What's your father
ice,
do for a living? Wait a minute. But tell me a little bit. What's your father do? What kind of a house did you grow up in?
I grew up in, my mom and dad got divorced early on. Mm-hmm. I was raised by my mom and grandmother and my little brother.
Wow.
We were a small family.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother was a real estate agent and a school teacher in the Lower East Side of Manhattan.
Wow.
Right by the Twin Towers. And we you know, it's one of the reasons why I left New York was 9/11 was tough for us. My a third of my family all got cancer at the same time. They, you know, all lived by the Twin Towers, and they all passed away. My mom, the last one, in last March. So, but when that happened, when 9/11 happened, you know, I said to myself, you know what? When I raise a family, I don't really want to. I don't trust it anymore. New York's not the same. Mm-hmm. I can't sit on the subway with my son when he's in high school and watch him. Or you know, I didn't have a son at the time, but my child. And I had visited California, Southern California. I visited my aunt, who was a director in Hollywood, and her husband, my uncle, my mother's brother. I visited them in Venice in the early 90s. Mm. And we had dinner one night, and she said, "What do you want for dessert?" And I said, "Of course, Italian ice." And she said, "No, they don't have that here. They don't even know what it is. They don't even know what it is." This was 1992, and I was sitting at the dinner table. I was 21, born in 1971, and I said, "You know what? If no one does it, when I'm able to do it, I'll bring Italian ice to California." Fast forward now 30 years.
Oh my God.
And we were able to move. I moved to Southern California from New York. I drove across country with my mom, which was an amazing trip.
Wow.
Yeah, it was amazing. She said, "You're not going alone. I'm coming with you."
Oh.
And I said, "No." I said, "You can't come. You're my mother." And she goes, "No, I'm coming." So we took the great. It literally.
What was her name? What was your mother's name?
Marilyn Leone.
Wow. God bless you.
And
you know
it
what?
Was the greatest
she's
trip.
She's looking down right now from heaven, Greg. And she's she's so proud of you talking to me right now and all the Weekend Warriors listening to this. It's just a beautiful thing. You're making my heart sing.
It was an amazing trip. I got to California in 2015.
Yeah.
And I'm going to look at my house that eventually my wife and I moved into and my son.
Uh-huh.
And I stop at a stoplight, and I turn to the right. And I look to the right, and I see this little shack on a dirt lot, and I pointed to it, and I said, "Italian ice." Perfect spot. And then eventually, 3 years later, I kept my eye on the building, on the lot. No one wanted it.
Why?
No one wanted it.
Why didn't they want that spot?
Because they felt like it was it had to be owner occupied. If you didn't, there was no real value in leveling it and then building something. It was all all self sustaining. So it had its own septic tank. The only thing it was connected to the city with was the electric. Everything else, it had telephone poles, you know. And
wow.
So I bought the house. Greatest place. I landed in the greatest place, I think, in the United States, probably on the planet, which is Thousand Oaks.
That's right.
Most beautiful. It has this. It's in this this valley called the Caneo Valley. So if you don't know what it is, it's surrounded by the Santa Monica Mountains. It sits in a bowl in the middle of all these mountains.
Mm.
So it has these microclimates. So we basically block out all the clouds. Mm. It's always nice. It's just an amazing place.
It's like a scoop of Italian ice is in a Dixie cup. That's what it is.
It is. It's like a scoop of Italian ice. So this artist that comes from New York City, this musician, drops here, and little do they know I'm bringing Italian ice. And in New York, if you know, because you grew up in New York.
Right, Far Rockaway. You know how you get to my house? You make a left at the gunfight. That's how you get to my house.
So Far Rockaway, do you know Far Rockaway, the middle street is 116th Street, the beach 116th.
I know it.
And my brother and I, with my dad, before they got divorced, lived on 127th, so wow. Right by you.
Oh, yeah, well, I was so anyway, in Bayswater. I was at the end of Mott Avenue. The planes from JFK used to fly right over my house. That's where I'm from, by Jamaica
Astro.
Bay.
Your hangout was Astroland.
Yes, yes. No, I remember. Oh, my God. You're just – the more I'm going to talk to you, my entire language is going to deteriorate. There won't be any R's in any of the words I'm going to say, and I'm just going to deteriorate in front of you, but it's fantastic. I love it, Greg.
You know, I lost the New York accent in, like, 15, 16, 17, and then I went back to New York to stay with my mom and my brother, Andrew, and like a flash, it all came back. I lost the California. So anyway, I'm back to square one with the accent.
Yes, so, you are a fish. Don't even think about saying you lost your accent. Not with everybody listening on the radio till you say forget about it and get out of here.
Oh, forget about it. You're going to know the dynamic between pizza and yes. Italian ice.
There is a dynamic. You stand up. You can't sit down. You stand up. You eat your slice. You have a Coca-Cola next to you. You're standing up. And as soon as you're done with that second slice, you go, where's the Italian ices? That's the connection.
That's right. And it's a synergistic effect yes. where Italian ice on its own is still, correct. You know, yeah, great.
Exactly.
And pizza on its own is great.
Yeah.
But when you have Italian ice and pizza, it's this.
I need a cup of coffee and a cigarette right now. I'm talking to you. This is unbelievable.
Right. So in Staten Island, there's a famous duo, the Italian ice place and Danino's pizza. So I built the Italian ice place, and then I said, you know what? Let me call the owners from Danino's. I know them. So I called them up, and I said, you know what? I want to bring Danino's exactly how it is.
Oh, no.
The New York pizza.
You're bringing it to Thousand Oaks?
Right next door to the Italian ice place.
No way. When is that happening?
Yeah. Well, it's almost finished, so a month or two, it should be open.
Oh,
but what we did was...
Oh, you know, am I going to promote this? Are you kidding me? Wow! You're going to need
surprise,
to have...
Right?
We're going to need to have like a Weekend Warrior version of your ices, so they'll come up and say, I want a Weekend Warrior, and we're going to have a slice of pizza with something on it. It was going to be... Maybe the slice will be cut out like a W or something. We're going to have to do something here, Greg Leone.
It's going to be phenomenal because the top, you know, you could argue the top three pizzas. I'm a pizza connoisseur. I'm
Me
a food
too.
Connoisseur.
Me
pizza
too.
And ice are in there.
Right.
So you could say John's of Bleecker. You could say Sally's in New Haven, which I've been to a million times.
Right.
And you could say Danino's. Whichever you argue, they're all one, right? So we're bringing Danino's. But then people started telling me, what about the water?
Yep.
The California water, is that the problem?
Right.
So what did I do? I bought these tanks, and I shipped the water right from my hose from California back to New York. and you want to, Dr. Clapper, I filmed the whole thing, and I put it on my Leone's Ice Instagram. So there's a whole like little movie in there of bringing the water to New York.
Oh, my
and
God.
We made everything with the California water, and it was perfect. In
wow.
fact, it was so perfect, they ran out of pizza dough at Danino's on one busy Saturday night, and they used all the California dough, and no one knew. It was exactly the same.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Yeah,
well, so your other
exactly
passion, Greg Leone, is music, right? You're a guitar player, right?
Yeah, I'm a guitar player. I was the lead guitarist in Screaming Broccoli and the Mudworms for, like, 15 years. We were on the circuit with a production company. So,
how are you going to incorporate me? This is what I want, because I'm a surfer. I mean, my dream come true is to eat a tuna fish sandwich and have surf movies, and I can have French fries and a tuna fish sandwich with a giant Kelly Slater video going on while I'm eating the food. This is like George Costanza having sex with a bologna sandwich under the pillow. Like, you want to, like, combine everything you love all at the same time. You got to have music at your place.
Yeah, well, of course I play music at the place, and there's going to be live music at the I ended up meeting so many musicians, famous musicians out here. They all say, "Oh, we can't wait till Danino's opens. We're going to do shows on the patio. It's going to be great." But yeah, my mom always wanted me to be her dream, and she always told me this, was she wanted me to have an art studio in Soho.
I did that. Like, I had my own art gallery in West Hollywood. I can tell you, I'll teach you all about good and bad about having that. But I had it for 3 years, and it was the greatest. I owned my own art gallery because I'm a sculptor. I go to Italy every summer to Michelangelo's quarry where he got the stone for the David. Wait, you go online, Google me. You'll see all the sculptures I make in white Italian marble. It'll blow your mind.
Oh, that's amazing.
I'm going to make a sculpture for your place. That's what I'm going to do. You're going to have a sculpture from Dr. Clapper.
Okay.
When you open that pizza place, I'm going to have people go, where's Dr. Clapper's marble sculpture? I'm going to give you one.
A marble sculpture of the Ice King would be perfect.
Yeah. Well, you can't. I'm Michelangelo. Yeah. You can't tell me what you want me to sculpt. I'm just going to give you one, okay? Calm down.
Okay.
Listen, on the line? Because I got to ask you all about Italian ices. I'm talking to you too much already. So hang on the line. Sure. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with the great Greg Leone, the greatest Italian ices in Los Angeles, and I'll tell you how to get there and what to do, but the flavors and the intricacies behind it. He's got his own building. We're having so much fun. Weekend Warriors Show here on 710 ESPN.
What's going on? It's Max. You know there's no better way to start your Saturday morning than with my friend Dr. Clapper and the Weekend Warrior Show.
What's going on, L.A.? This is Kobe Bryant.
It's the most entertaining thing in the world.
Start your weekend off right, listening to the Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper.
I'm schwitzing like a piece of tuna fish.
Every Saturday morning from 7 to 9 a.m. on ESPN, 710, home of your Los Angeles Lakers.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. I'm having too much fun. Can't believe it. Talking to the great Greg Leone from Leone's Italian Ice. Before we get started, Greg, about what exactly is Italian Ice and this whole journey, I want to take advantage of you being on the phone so that I can play a soundbite, and I want you to interpret for us. What do you hear when you hear Berry Gordy, who started Motown Records, loving the whole idea of having his own building, like the Ford Motor Plant, where the raw material comes in one door and a finished car comes out the other, and how this relates to Greg Leone's dream come true of making his own building of Italian Ice. Listen to the soundbite.
And Mickey Stevens and I, and our director, and then we had a lot of lucky breaks. I happened to have worked in the Ford Motor Company, and I saw the assembly line cars come in one door, bare metal frame, and out another door, a brand new car. And I said, oh, what a wonderful idea. I think I want to do this with people, you know. And of course, people wanted to throw me into the crazy house. Human beings, you can't do that. And so, but we ended up having various sections where we had an artist development, we had a producers studio, we had choreographers from that we brought in, and then we had a woman who had a finishing school, and her name was Maxine Powell, and you know, she taught them, and their big goal was one day they would be sitting with kings and queens, and in fact they did meet the Queen of England, so she was right, and they were very proper. And
Greg Leone, the Queen of England's going to come to Leone's Italian Ice one day. How do you like that dream?
That'd be great.
What do you think? What do you hear when you hear that? I'm curious.
You know, you're going to relate to this because it's the same with you're sculpting, right? Mm-hmm. So it's the marble coming into your studio and then leaving as a sculpture.
Mm-hmm.
So when you listen to people like Berry Gordy, and you listen to people that have accomplished something that you think is substantial, it's a life lesson, and you mm-hmm. take pieces of it and you can apply it to what you think. Mm-hmm. You can apply it to, you know, as an artist and as an, I guess you could say, entrepreneur, and as someone that is very disciplined, balanced, focus is really the key to everything. You take that and you say, well, you know what? Then what I was thinking probably was true. Mm-hmm. What I was feeling was true, or what I was feeling might be wrong. Mm-hmm. But it gives you the confidence in that your direction is correct. When you listen to Barry Gordy, you can't just say, you can't just listen to someone like that and say, I'm going to take the exact same steps and end up in the exact same place. That will never work. Mm. But what you do is you take the philosophies behind what he's saying.
The inspiration.
And, the inspiration, the passion. It's you know, I used to take music lessons with a very good friend of mine, Ron Thal. He ended up becoming the guitar player of Guns N' Roses. Mm. And he was a prodigy from when we were kids. Mm. He was always a prodigy. Mm. He played everything. He knew everything. He read a physics book. He knew the physics. Mm. He was just a musical prodigy. And he's rated right now, I think he's rated the best guitar player on the planet after the passing of the great Eddie Van Halen. Mm. But he said to me once in a lesson, and I always remember this, he said, because I was a musical, I mean, I didn't have to practice. I was great at music from day one, although I did practice my butt off because you have to be focused to get to a level of great achievement, right? Mm-hmm. But he said to me, talent only brings you so far. It's all about work ethic. Mm. Work ethic, discipline, focus. And, you know, when you say, where'd you grow up? I grew up in Brooklyn, but we also grew up in the Catskills in Woodstock, New York. Mm. And that's why I know my brother Andrew does too, we have a connection to Mike Tyson in that way, in that dynamic, right? Now, we didn't grow up in Brownsville. My wife grew up in East New York where Mike Tyson and Biggie Smalls and those guys grew up. She's from Barbados. Mm-hmm. She's the chocolate ice queen, I call her.
Yeah.
And I even drew a caricature of her and she's on the. It's funny. It's great. Anyway, you know, that dynamic of the streets and then the country, it shapes you in a way. It brings you from this hectic grind to a place where you could almost think and meditate. And you know, if you listen to Mike Tyson talk, if you listen...
I did a whole show last Saturday about Mike Tyson. You need to listen to the podcast. You'll hear him talk.
I listened to it.
You did listen to it.
It was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. I listen to everything that he does and that you do. So when he speaks, even early on in the 80s and 90s in his career, when he was at his peak, whenever he spoke about boxing... He was brilliant. The philosophies that Cuss taught him. And it's just that, you know, and then the media, of course, turned it into a whirlwind because it was, you know, he was the focus. There was some crazy life things going on. But if you just listen to him talk and speak about boxing and on the things he knew, he was brilliant.
Yeah.
And he still carries that. He still carries that on today. There's things you could take from Mike Tyson that are absolutely brilliant.
So, Greg Leone, I've spent two segments with you already. I didn't spend not a second did we spend on talking about what makes Italian ice. What is Italian ice? And why are you so amazing?
Here's Italian ice. I don't know if I'm so amazing, but here's Italian ice. At the turn of the century, the 1900s, when the Italians migrated to Ellis Island, New York, they brought with them the knowledge, the know-how, the artistry of a lot of things. And one of those things was... from the Sicilians. My family's from Naples, but the Sicilians brought pastries and granita. So if you've been to Italy, for those of you who do not know, granita in Italian, granulated ice, granita is how they make it in Italy is, let's say you just take coffee. Mm-hmm. So coffee is coffee, milk, and sugar. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they freeze it. They wait till it gets 50% frozen. They scrape it. Then they freeze it again to say another 50%. They scrape it again until they have almost like a snow cone, much better than a snow cone. But what they did was when they brought that mixture to America, they put that mixture into an American ice cream machine or an ice cream cranked barrel called an Emery Thompson. Mm. If you guys know the first ice cream machines, it looked like a barrel with a crank on top.
Mm-hmm.
And they put their mixture into that. and they cranked it and they froze it, and out came Italian ice.
Wow.
And it's the ingredients of, and that's why I always say Italian American cooking, Italian American pizza from Naples coming to America. The ingredients, yes, far superior in Italy, farm to table. They make their own cheese. They have their own cows that give curd that mm-hmm. they make the mozzarella from. Mm-hmm. And it's far superior ingredients, but the American machinery is on another atmosphere, far superior than they had in Italy. And when they brought their knowledge and applied it to the American machinery, they ended up making Italian-American cuisine that was started, obviously, in Brooklyn. I mean, that's where they went to. Mm-hmm. And then it migrated out to New York City and Staten Island, the boroughs, then Boston and Chicago. And as the Italian ice moved out with the Italians, it changed. So all the Italian ice regionally is completely different from one another. Hmm. My Italian ice, we opened originally in 1927 in Brooklyn on New Utrecht Avenue and 72nd Street.
Wow.
It was not called Leone's at the time. It was called Rispoli's. My family from Naples came to America with my extended family from Sicily. And I grew up in a pastry shop with my dad. My dad would take me on the early 70s to different Italian ice places and pastry shops. Alba's, Rispoli's, all the famous ones, right?
Ferrara's.
It's an art. There's Ferrara's in Manhattan, right, in Little Italy.
Right.
And so what we knew was, tasting all the Italian ice, of course you narrowed it down to Rispoli's, was absolutely by far the best Italian ice. Mm. So I grew up in the shop, and they used to say to me as a little baby, "Do you want to learn how to make the ice?" And I would say, "No, I don't need to know. I just want to eat it." Now, fast forward 40 years, 30 years, I called them up and I said, it's Gregory Leone. I want to bring Italian ice to California. And they said, "You're out of your mind. Don't do it." And I begged them. I begged and pleaded. And they said, you know, after 4 or 5 years of being persistent, they said, "You know what? Okay, come in." And I sat, and I went and wow. worked in the pastry shop for a month with people that only spoke Sicilian, that have only been making pastries and Italian ice their entire life.
Wow.
And I said, "Okay." I said, "Okay, I'm ready to learn." And they said, "Okay, go get a pound of sugar." And I said, "Okay, where's the measuring cup?" And they said, no, use your hands. Oh. And I said, "My hands?
Wow.
How do you do it?" And I put my hands in the sugar and I lifted up, and they said, "Nope, that's not a pound." And the guy, my friend, grabs my hands, he opens them up, puts them back in the sugar, and he says, "That's a pound." And I say, and now I'm thinking to myself, this guy's out of his mind. I can't learn anything here. And I said, "You sure about that?" And of course, it's very tough to communicate, because they are strictly Sicilian dialect, which is it's completely different from Italian, which I'm really shaky on anyway. I don't really know it at all.
Wow.
So he said, "Yeah." So he puts it on the scale. It was exactly a pound.
No.
They do everything by hand. No measuring cups. So I had to learn everything from scratch. So once I, after, you know, three, four weeks of solid, you know, 10-hour days, they said, "You're ready to go." So I come to California, and I called the distributors in the area, and I said, "These are the ingredients I need." And they said, "We never heard of these ingredients. We can't get you anything." So now now my dream is like on hold. I'm saying, what do I do? So now I have to use the same exact distributor that place used since 1927 to send me what I need to make these Italian ice. So it's not really, I didn't just pop up and make Italian ice and say, this is it. I'm not bringing, I mean, you talk about the building. This is a perfect segue into this. You talk about the building I built.
Mm-hmm.
The building is my vision of New York. So when I'm on this property, which I'm on right now, and I'm looking at the building and the cement and the bricks and the streetlights and everything that I put in, that's all from New York. This is a building from Brooklyn, under the Brooklyn Bridge, that I envisioned in this spot.
You're amazing.
From the gate. I'm bringing the culture. I'm bringing what I want to do is I want to bring the place that I went to as a kid And I enjoyed with my grandparents and parents. And you know what? It's exactly that.
Have you ever been surfing? Have you ever gone surfing?
You know, after Jaws, not really.
I'm going to take you surfing. I'm not only going to take you surfing, but Greg Leone, free orthopedic surgery for the rest of your life, okay? If you ever hurt yourself, you now know who to come to. You've got someone in the family now to take care of you. God bless you. What a dream.
You know, it's you just forge ahead and you
that's
know
right.
It's a different mindset. I have to say, I'm going to tell you this. This is a good lesson. It's a different mindset when you're a worker and you're an entrepreneur. I'm just going to say the word entrepreneur, even though I don't really love the word.
I hate that word.
When you
I
are
agree.
A business person,
yeah,
you know, when it's a different mindset because we are always in the mindset of where's my paycheck coming from when
right.
when you want to work for somebody,
right?
Even if you're out of college, you could graduate the top of Harvard, but when you leave there, you're going to say, which law firm can I go to?
Right.
I want to go to the best law firm. And although that's an amazing accomplishment and it's great for people, it's different than right. thinking, what can I do to forge ahead in my life and bring experience to people and this art to people? This is this place in New York City. Growing up, I was, before they had the term street art, I was a street artist. We called it a graffiti artist.
Right.
I was a street artist. I was a musician. I was a composer. I was a studio musician. I went to audio engineering school. I worked at NYU Medical for 8 years, the medical center. That's really where the transformation into an entrepreneur came at NYU and how I branched off.
When the pizza place opens, we're going to have you come on again and we're going to promote the pizza place. But until then, I can't wait for the Weekend Warriors and myself and my family to come there and meet you in person. Greg Leone, I can't thank you enough for coming on board with us and telling us the story. This is one of the big, I've been doing this show for 12 years, and I've had all kinds of guests. But you, my friend, are one of my favorite. Thanks so much for doing this.
Oh, thank
I really
you very
appreciate
much.
It. All right, we will be in touch for sure, and get ready for the onslaught. And we'll talk soon.
Yes.
Thanks so much, Greg Leone.
Bye-bye.
Wow. I want to give a shout-out to my friend Robert Grossman and Jeff Grogan for telling me about Leone's Italian Ice. Unbelievable. All right, we'll take a break, pay some bills. Short segment to come back to tell you what we're going to do next week. Oh, my God, is it going to be cool. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on 710 ESPN.
Hey, it's Sedano. You know there's no better way to start your Saturday than when my guy, Dr. Clapper, and the Weekend Warrior Show, 7 to 9 a.m. Saturday mornings.
What's going on, L.A.? This is Kobe Bryant.
It's time for Clapper Killies.
Start your weekend off right, listening to the Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper.
Where has this been my whole life?
Every Saturday morning from 7 to 9 a.m. on ESPN, 710, home of your Los Angeles Lakers.
Hard to interrupt that song. Good form. I want to give a big shout out to Jared Abrams, who tracked down Greg Leone for me and tracked down the guest for next week, who's the man who's in charge of this crazy sport that's taking over the nation and the world. And it's called pickleball. Trust me, you can't throw a rock and not hit someone who can turn around and say, I either play pickleball or I know someone who plays pickleball. What the hell is pickleball? I'm going to explain next week. We're going to get into it. But it is a fantastic subject, and I'm going to somehow relate this to Richard Nixon opening the door to China with what's known as ping pong diplomacy. There's a lot of power in having a paddle and a ball. And that's basically what pickleball is. But the story behind opening the door to China with ping pong started with a Jewish guy from Culver City, a ping pong player, Glenn Cohen. He got on the wrong bus. They're playing in a tournament in Japan in 1971. This wild and crazy guy, ping pong player from Culver City, California, he's so wild, he missed the bus in Japan to the champion, to the arena. He doesn't know from nothing. He gets on the wrong bus. He gets on the bus with the Chinese ping pong players and sits down. And for 10 minutes, they looked at this American. Since the Korean War, for 20 years, Chinese are not allowed to have anything to do with Americans. Well, now they got this wild and crazy Jewish guy on the bus going to the arena with them. And after about 10 minutes, one, just one, of the Chinese ping pong players looked at him, opened up his athletic bag, and gave him, the American, a silk screen of a mountain range, a picture from China, as a gift. This Glenn Cowan looked at him and said, "Thank you. I got to give you a gift, a tie-dye T-shirt, something." And the bus gets to the arena, and walking down out of the bus for the first time ever is a Caucasian American athlete, ping pong player, next to a Chinese ping pong player. The photographers at the time, this is 1971, there's no internet, there's no Twitter, took pictures of these two guys. And Mao Zedong, the head of China, said about this ping pong player, I can't pronounce his name, I gotta learn it, "He's not only good at ping pong, he's really good at diplomacy." And that started the ball rolling. This Meshuggah, who got on the wrong bus, he missed his bus to the arena, did something that no politician could ever even dream of doing. Nixon gets the credit, but that came afterwards. The ping pong player is who did it. It's an unbelievable story. I can't wait to get the sound bites to Will Orms for next week. Surfing, boy, have I been having a great time, particularly last Sunday with my crew, because the water was so rough that the computer said, forget about it. Conditions are terrible. But I work all week. I'm busy seeing patients, doing surgery, eating Italian ices. I only got Sunday morning, so I got to go anyway. And I get up to Ventura, park my car in pitch black darkness, and get in my wetsuit. And one of my buddies, John McAtee, says, "Are you going, Robbie?" I said, "Of course I'm going. That's what I'm here for. I'm getting wet. I don't care what the computer says." And he said, "Well, then I'm going." And the two of us went out into this windy, choppy, paddled out. Guess what happened? It's as though the big surfer in the sky, better known as God, said, "Oh, my God, that's me," he said, because he's God. "Robbie Clapper's in the ocean. I got to flip the switch." He flips the switch, and guess what? Fantastic waves come out of nowhere. And we had the greatest session. And, of course, we end up at the greatest bakery, Good Time Donut. And that was a great conclusion to my week. Surfing in the conditions that the computer said were bad, but here's the deal. Computers don't surf. So all the millennials who look at the computer to decide whether they're going to go surfing or not said, it's terrible. Good. I love this computer. Someone one day may hijack the computer and say things that aren't true just so everybody believes it. That's why it's good to have what's known as animal time. One of my friends who's a surfer in Hawaii, Todd, he taught me that. I said to him one day, "What's the greatest thing to you, Todd, about surfing?" It's always interesting, the answers that I get, because it's impossible to describe. It's like saying, "Why do you love your wife?" You can't, there's no words. It's a feeling. But I love asking that question. I love asking questions that have no answer. "Todd, why do you love surfing so much?" figuring it's going to be the exercise, riding the wave, standing up, whatever, the being in nature and all. No, you know what he said? Because it teaches you how to live in animal time. I said, animal time? What's animal time? He says, you don't have a watch anymore. Clock. All this man-made idea of time is useless. The dolphins don't wear watches. The whales don't wear watches. The pelicans don't have a watch. You go out, the sun comes up, and then the sun goes down. All this man-made, contrived clock doesn't exist. You live like the animals. Animal time. That's exactly right. That's why you need to get in the ocean. I don't care what the condition is. Miracles will happen. It's not just Smokey Robinson and the miracles. Other miracles can happen. Then all of a sudden, the wind stops. The chop goes away. And now, it's just the two of us in the water. The crowd's not there, having the greatest day of our life. Ending up having the greatest donut at Good Time Donuts. So until next week, can't wait to talk about ping pong diplomacy. And I may even talk about Gene Wilder, the actor, and I'll explain. Until next week, I leave you with Volare, which means I'm singing and I'm flying, which you and I do each and every Saturday. Until then, I'll see you on the radio.